We're tracking a story that's affecting thousands of women around the country. No one knows exactly how many rape kits go on test in the United States, but some estimates put it in the hundreds of thousands. Processing the kits of DNA samples taken after a sexual assault could be instrumental in the prosecution of rapists.
This month, President Obama included a $35 million grant in his proposed budget earmarked to help end the rape kit testing backlog. Here to talk about that proposal is Sarah Tofte. She's the Vice President of Advocacy for the Joyful Heart Foundation. Sarah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
First off, how widespread is the problem of untested rape kits?
That's a great and very important question. As you said before, federal experts have estimated in the past that they think it's at least hundreds of thousands of untested kits in police storage facilities throughout the country. The truth is we don't know the number for sure because very few states and cities and the federal government doesn't track rape kit evidence and untested evidence. So we don't know for sure. What I can say is that every city or state where either advocacy groups or journalists or victims' rights advocates have asked about backlogs, we have found tens of thousands of them in every city we've looked in throughout the country.
Now, if you haven't been involved in what happens after a rape at some level before, what is a rape kit?
Yeah. So a rape kit is a collection of DNA evidence that is taken from a rape victim's body in the immediate aftermath of the crime. When a survivor goes to the hospital or goes to the police station after a rape, she will be asked to submit to the collection of this kit. And what it looks like is a number of swabs that are taken from the victim's body in any place where the victim indicates the offender may have left his DNA. And all of that is packaged into either a large envelope or a box, and that is a rape kit.
And where do they get stored in the meantime? If there are tens of thousands of them in each city and hundreds of thousands nationally, where are they kept?
Yeah. A great question. The rape kit examination itself takes about 4 to 6 hours, and it's a very invasive process. I think most survivors assume, and most members of the public assume, that once the rape kit is collected, if the crime is reported, that the next step is for the kit to be sent directly to the crime lab. And all too often, that isn't the case. These kits are booked into police evidence and kept there. They remain there untested. They never make it to the crime lab in the first place. And that's where we find a majority of these kits that are in the backlog are in these police storage facilities throughout the country.
So what's stopping authorities from testing all these kits?
Well, authorities often will cite the issue of resources, that DNA testing and especially rape kit testing is costly. And they don't have unlimited resources, and so they have to prioritize which kits they will send to the crime lab. And that is certainly a piece of it. In my experience, we worked with law enforcement throughout the country on this issue. What I also see is that our criminal justice system response to rape in general, and this is reflected in how we handle rape kit evidence, is still pretty anemic. Very few rape cases make it past the reporting stage. Very few rape cases see an arrest, much less a prosecution. It is still, of all, serious violent crimes, it has the lowest arrest rate and certainly the lowest prosecution rate. And so a lot of these rape kits are left behind because we still don't take rape cases seriously enough as communities, and certainly I think law enforcement could do more to move these cases forward. And if they could make that commitment, I think you would see more and more rape kits moving through the system because rape kit testing is an essential investigative tool. It can identify an unknown offender. It can place a known offender at the scene of the crime. It can connect serial rapists. It can affirm a victim's story and discredit the suspect, and it can exonerate innocent suspects as well. And so if you're serious about moving a rape case forward, then you have to make a commitment to testing the rape kit.
Now, we've been talking about rape kits, and it sounds kind of clinical when you just use that phrase. So I wonder if you could tell us about a person who has been affected by the testing of a rape kit and what happened.
That's a great question. It's true. What we try to remember and what we encourage policymakers to remember is that these rape kits, when we talk about it in terms of numbers and we talk about it in terms of DNA, it is very clinical sounding. And I think in a way that allows us to distance ourselves from the stories behind it. And in truth, each one of these rape kits represents the story of a survivor who took a very courageous step to come forward and report a rape and have a rape kit examination done. And that is no easy decision. It takes so much bravery, so much strength, and so much courage. And we hear from survivors all the time that had rape kits collected and didn't hear anything back ever again from law enforcement, that never either, you know, didn't learn about what happened to their kit, or after much advocacy by the survivor themselves, learned that the kit would stay behind in police storage and would not be tested. And that kind of news was devastating for those survivors. It made them feel, many of them feel like their case just didn't matter and that there was no point in going through all of what reporting their rape required. We also do hear from survivors whose kits had been in a backlog and eventually were tested. And from them, what we hear over and over again is how much it meant to them that eventually their kit was tested, how much it meant to them to learn the investigative information that was contained in the kit, how difficult it was that they had to wait such a long time for that information, and how grateful it was that their cases eventually moved forward. I worked with a woman in Los Angeles named Helena, whose kit was in a backlog for about 13 years, stuck in a police storage facility under the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. And she was raped by a stranger, and she had spent all those years wondering who had done this to her, constantly looking over her shoulder, wondering if the stranger she was seeing in the grocery store or at the mall might have happened to be the person who raped her, because she had no way to identify the individual who had done this to her. And the moment her rape kit test came back and identified the offender, she said it was when she got those results, it was the first time she slept through the night since she had been raped. So I think it can bring an incredible peace of mind for some folks. It can help them feel like their case in the end eventually did matter, but it certainly can also bring up feelings of anger and disappointment that it took that long to get that result, and a lot of feeling of loss and grief that it would have been wonderful to have had those results much sooner in the process.
Well, Tennessee and Texas have a backlog in the tens of thousands of untested rape kits going back to the 1980s. So I guess what that means is that there are rapists out there who might be registered in the database, and they're still, I guess, walking around as a result. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's two pieces to this story and this reform. One is that certainly when a rape kit goes untested and a case doesn't move forward, that is certainly difficult for victims and doesn't provide the justice and perhaps the healing they were hoping for. And the other piece of it, the flip side, is that it also allows perpetrators to avoid accountability. Recently, we've been working on a project in Detroit, and they have about 11,000 untested kits, and they've just tested the first 1,600 of their kits in their backlog. And just in those first 1,600, they've identified 100 serial rapists. Mm. So, you look at that and you feel this huge sense of despair that these individuals have been allowed to continue sort of to be out there in the community, continuing to perpetuate these crimes, that we weren't able to apprehend them sooner. I think the other piece of it is to remember what else we're discovering in Detroit is that in these first 1,500 kits, included profiles of offenders who went on to commit other crimes in 23 additional states, so almost half of the states in the U.S. So it's really important for folks to remember that even if, you don't know if you have a backlog in your city or state, the fact is that, perpetrators don't just stay within certain city limits or state limits, and that any backlog in any city or any state can have an impact on any community in the U.S.
It seems like there's starting to be momentum, both at the federal level. We heard about the grant President Obama has earmarked to get these kits tested. And what about at the local level within the states themselves?
Yeah, there is. There's huge momentum. I've been working on this issue for a while, and I would say the last few years we've seen more progress than at any other time. So people get this, that this matters a great deal for survivors, for community safety, and for justice. There is a lot of movement on the state levels as well. Lots of states are introducing legislation to track, see how big backlogs are in each state, and require that those backlogs be testing. And every, you know, few weeks or so, I feel like I hear from a new city that has either discovered a backlog or has known it's had a backlog for a while and wants to change things, wants to reform the way it's responding to sexual assault and reform the way it's handling rape kit evidence, to change the system for survivors and to make this crime a little bit harder for perpetrators to get away with.
What kind of message do you think it sends to rape victims when these tests just sit in storage for years?
Well, I think the message really is devastating. And like I said, we hear that message over and over again. They lose faith in the system, the criminal justice system. They feel like I said before, that their case really didn't matter, that there was no point in reporting in the first place. And I think it can sort of increase, you know, the feelings of shame and stigma that, you know, a rape survivor sometimes can feel in the aftermath of the crime. It feels like, the folks that are supposed to help them, the police and the prosecutors, turn their backs on them. So it can have a devastating impact on survivors and sends a really difficult message to them that you may have reported your case in vain and everything you went through, we didn't take as a system and as a community as seriously as we should. And so that's why my hope is with, it's sort of late in coming for so many of these victims. But if we can show, sort of turn this around a bit, to make sure that every rape kit that is collected and booked into police evidence is tested and every case is given a comprehensive and thorough investigation, I hope we can turn this message around. To show survivors of sexual assault that they deserve so much.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you.
Sarah Tofte is the Vice President of Advocacy for the Joyful Heart Foundation.
Coming up, look at a major shakeup in Milwaukee County's mental health system. I'm Rob Ferrer.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.